Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Paul Douglas with you. It's already Thursday, I think. Not that it matters, but yeah, on paper it's Thursday. It's 4:08. Jora is off today. Her oldest child is having sinus surgery, and so good luck, Marley. Hope everything went well, and Jora will be back tomorrow. By the way, the Weather Service has just come out with a new warning, a severe thunderstorm warning. Southwestern Sibley, north central Brown, southeastern Renville County, and northwestern Nicollet County. Just to the west of New Ulm, southwest of Gaylord, out towards Sleepy Eye, pretty strong cell capable of 60-mile-an-hour winds, maybe some minor damage. Again, if you live down near Gibbon, Lafayette, Evan, St. George, time to take cover. For some time, we've been, talking about justice and, you know, is this time different? It sure feels different, you know, and it's horrific that George Floyd, his death, his murder, was required to create true systemic change in the United States. It sure seems like that's what's happening. Police reform, corporations trying to step up, people trying to do the right thing. And we'll see. Is it a flash in the pan? Will there be true justice? I'm going to talk to somebody from Bethel coming up in just a few minutes. The chief diversity officer who has something to say about that. My take, for what it's worth, take it or leave it, you have the freedom to be you. A lot of us like to talk about our freedoms. Right? My take, you have the freedom to be you, the way you were born. The freedom to live your life without being threatened, without living in fear, without being assaulted, or worse. The freedom not to have others try to change you or minimize you. The freedom to be you. I think that's when we say the pledge, liberty and justice for all. I think that's what they're talking about. God made us different. The Dalai Lama, who I actually shared a flight with, a Delta flight to Washington, D.C., didn't realize it was the Dalai Lama till the next day, and I saw a headline, the Dalai Lama talking to a group on the mall in Washington, D.C. He said something recently that made me do a double take. The Dalai Lama said, fundamentally, human beings are the same. Imagine being lost in some remote place and suddenly seeing someone coming towards you over the horizon. You wouldn't care about their race, nationality, or religious faith. You'd be filled with the joy of encountering another human being. I think he has a point. We lose sight of that. By the way, tomorrow is Juneteenth. A symbolic holiday celebrates the end of slavery here in the United States. On that day, June 19, 1865, enslaved Texans found out that they had been freed 2 years earlier through the Emancipation Proclamation when Major General Gordon Granger arrived to announce that the Civil War was over and so was slavery. They were no longer property of white slave owners. Those who deny freedom to others deserve it not for themselves, and under a just God cannot long retain it. Abraham Lincoln said that. April 6th, 1859, in a letter to Henry Pierce. Just wanted to share that. DJ Dave Josephson, our amazing producer, you have a little bit of good news to share, right?
Well, yeah, I think in, you know, look, this is a crazy time for all of us, but we're trying to all, you know, celebrate summer in whatever way we can. I know some friends of mine went up to the Boundary Waters canoe area just in the last couple of weeks, and they said it is just packed up there, which, you know, packed in the Boundary Waters means you might see two other canoes as you paddle by. So it's a great place to social distance. And I think people are really, you know, taking advantage of our state and maybe doing the things that they would always like to do, head up to the Gunflint Trail or Ely or the North Shore or whatever. And we talked to a representative from the DNR about a month ago now, and she told us that state parks were going to be opening slowly in phases, and particularly the campgrounds, you know, 20 or 30 at a time throughout June. And as of this last Monday, the final phase of campgrounds and other facilities opened at most state parks. There's still some, you know, indoor facilities that are closed, but the majority of the outdoor facilities, save a few select campgrounds, are now open. And this is the first weekend when you can have your pick of state park campgrounds and other activities. And I think that's good news for a lot of Minnesotans that those, you know, those places will be utilized and, you know, crowded's maybe the wrong term because there's plenty of space outdoors to be. So that's good news in my book and may have to do with the reason that I'm off tomorrow as we head up north to take advantage of that. And then one more thing is, you know, I think a lot of us like to think about going to a drive-in movie. It's sort of nostalgic, but how often do you actually get to that? I feel like a lot of Minnesotans talk about going to drive-ins and don't go that often. And I think this might be the summer with a lot of other entertainment options not available. It might be the summer to check that out. And there still are six available in the state. There's three that are kind of close to the metro, including Valley High and Lake Elmo, Starlight and Litchfield. And there's one at Elko Speedway. They actually play movies there at the Speedway. And then there's a few in outstate, Warren, Minnesota, Laverne, and Long Prairie. So this might be the summer to bust out the tent for a camping trip and then maybe take in a drive-in as well.
God, that sounds good. That sounds good. Yeah, soak up summer. Mm-hmm. We earn our summers. And thank you, DJ, for sharing that. Some great news. And I'm anxious to get outside just like everybody else. When we come back, the chief diversity officer from Bethel University, Dr. Ruben Rivera, he's next. Paul Douglas and DJ Dave Josephson producing, thank you for tuning in. This sure seems like a moment in time, a historical turning point, an inflection point, a tipping point. This does seem different when it comes to racial justice. And here at CCO, we are trying to get as many diverse voices and viewpoints and perspectives on the air as we can. Dr. Ruben Rivera, a history professor at Bethel University. He's also chief diversity officer. Dr. Rivera, thank you and welcome to the show.
Thank you. What an honor. I'm glad to be of any help I can.
Well, we appreciate that. And you're joining us from the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline. I think I know what a diversity officer is, but can you explain to listeners what that entails?
Well, I work at a Christian liberal arts university. So at Bethel University, it would entail really integrating from our faith values, just a way to reflect the diversity of the what we call the kingdom of God, to make a place where everyone is truly welcome and experiences the fullness of academic, kind of social and spiritual, you know, thriving at the school. So it's just a way of to have actual diversity that reflects the world, and then a way to make sure that that everyone comes together and understands one another, and just has a sense of community. I mean, there's more to it than that. There's a lot. There's building institutional capacity and on and on and on. But in a sense, that's really what I'm trying to do. I think one of the things I try to do is build that, and I do this really in different places. And one of the challenges is that when people try to do, you know, kind of diversity, inclusion, and equity, but they don't ground it in the values of the community they're working with. And so it's really important to make sure that you understand the community itself, so that in a sense I can say, look, at a place like Bethel, if you're a Christian, I'm actually not asking you to do anything that's not in your own values to do. Mm-hmm. So I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of what you wrote, you sent a note to our producer, Dave Josephson, and I saw some of your comments, and they really resonated. You wrote the following. Jesus said, if you love those who love you and do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? Any non-believer can do that. That's Luke 6, 32 through 33. That resonated. And you say, what I seek to promote is something called remarkable Christianity. What is that?
So, you know, many religions, and not just Christianity, frequently get caught up. So it's not even about hypocrisy. In other words, our Christian goodness, our virtues of love and kindness and charity, those are real virtues. The challenge is they become unremarkable when we just give those things to the people who are in our in-group. So in that sense, they kind of become culturally captive. You know, that it's real goodness. I mean, the virtues and all that, they're good. The problem is we tend to give them only to the people that are in our party, along racial lines, maybe gender or class lines. So they become captive. And to me, that's not remarkable. It's not remarkable that you should love and be good to someone who's just this side of not too different from you. To me, what's remarkable about the teachings of Jesus in particular is that we're going to actually love and do good to those people who are different from us and with whom we are going to disagree. If you can't give that goodness to people who are different from you, I am not really sure why Christianity is a thing. You know, it's important to understand that what I'm calling unremarkable Christianity in many ways is supposed to be just normal Christianity. You know, it's not, is it easy to love your enemy? Absolutely no. But there's something that has to be different that says, I am going to treat the stranger, you know, the immigrant in the land, for example, even the undocumented immigrant. I know there are challenges around those issues, and I respect that. But I have to try to imagine, what if this person was my mom? I mean, my mother and I have had real disagreements in our lives. But the difference is that she's my mother, and she's human to me. So the difference is I might have a disagreement with her, but I'm disagreeing with someone who's really human. And Christianity becomes unremarkable when other people, they're just not as human. They're not as loved as our own or as people in our own party. Anyone can do that. And that was the reason I made that quote by Jesus. If you love those who love you, do good to those good to you. There's really nothing remarkable about that. So that's what I'm trying to do. A lot of the work I do, particularly around Christian circles, because this stuff is so politically divided, is to say, look, all we're trying to do is express to the world what is truly remarkable about what we claim we believe in. So in that sense, I oftentimes say, look, if you're, and I know this can get a little strong, but if your Christianity can't make you good to me, I'm not really sure why it's a big thing. So I hope that's a... that's a small piece of what I would get into, because it's something I'm quite passionate about.
No, I tend to agree with you. I mean, how would Jesus deal with this? I think he would be a uniter and a healer. He would try to pull people together and not try to divide them. My question to you, and I've broached this with ministers, but based on what you know of the Gospels, is racism and discrimination sinful?
Absolutely, yes. Again, here's the problem. We can be Christian. You can come through conversion. But I think one of the problems is that, and I've had these discussions numerous times in many different venues, and I'll hear something like, why do we have to talk about racism? Or why do we have to talk about multiculturalism or politically correct whatever? You know, why can't we just be Christian? I'm just a Christian. Okay, so here's the hard news. It is not possible for anyone to just be a Christian. I mean, Christianity is important to you. It certainly is to me. It may even be the most important thing about you, but it cannot be the only thing about you. I mean, our Christianity could be influenced by something as arbitrary as where you happen to be born in the United States of America. I mean, think about that. How you were raised, where you went to school, where you align on the political spectrum, and on and on and on. All of these things will influence our Christianity. So oftentimes people, they think they're just Christian, and that's actually not possible. So we need to begin to explore those areas in our lives that we know they're sinful. And the reason we know it is this. If it was happening to us and those we love, we would automatically and instantly and unequivocally know that it was evil. So you can ask it of racism. You know, you never do anything to anyone that you would hate done to you and those you love. You treat others the way you would want. Well, who would want to be treated as a slave or experience Jim Crow? It is a sin. It is a sin for so, so many reasons. The problem is it's too easy for our Christianity to be influenced by other things, and then we begin justifying things that are happening to other people that we would never allow if they were happening to us. So there's a lot more I could say about that, but to the short answer to your question is absolutely, racism is a sin. One of the challenges in the United States is that we have become a racialized society. You don't have to be a conscious racist for this to continue to be a problem, because we became a racialized society deliberately over the generations, law by law, court case by court case, broken treaty by broken treaty. So you don't have to be someone who's conscious. Are the very structures themselves, you know, racism frequently just continues to morph in the United States of America. And here's just a quick example. If you could imagine that an alien anthropologist from some world millions of light years away came to what is now the Americas, all the way from, you know, the Americas, Canada, all the way down to the tip of Latin America. And they're an anthropologist. They're invisible. We can't see them, but they're observing us for generations, you know. And then, you know, they go back to their planet and they go to a scientific conference. And the conference starts with this question: what was one of the things you really noticed as you observed the Americas? And the alien anthropologist says something that goes like this. You know, one of the things I noticed almost immediately was that the higher I looked up the socioeconomic ladder, the lighter skin was. I mean, that's just a fact. Okay, and if you're sitting there in a panel with other scientists, the question you must ask next is, why? And if we understand the history, we do understand the history of why, even to this very day, the higher you go up the social ladder, the lighter skin color is. That might not be the fault of anyone today, but it's something that continues in many ways. I mean, we have so many biases, and we think that somehow if we're religious, that automatically goes away because we're sincere Christians or some other religion. But we know from studies, for example, that you ask people to draw, just to hand draw people, and then they say, okay, so hand draw leaders, and the leaders are almost always taller. How does that work? You know, why do we draw leaders taller? Why, you know, my wife had a friend in college who just loved her to death, a white friend, and used to brag about my wife to his mother, you know, that how smart she was fluent in language. And then when they graduated college and my wife, Anita, met this mother, her statement was, oh, wow, all this time I thought you were tall and blonde. I mean, what does that mean? You know, and so we might not know that these things are impacting us, but they are. And until we do some things to help us to realize, we might not even mean them. You know, right. So right now we're talking about just the way this is embedded in our culture, in our societies, in our psyches. We haven't even talked about how it's embedded systemically. But we think we're functioning as good people, and we are good, but we're usually just good to our own. And insofar as we're good to our own, that is not remarkable.
Professor, let's keep this dialogue going. I want to hear more. Dr. Ruben Rivera, Chief Diversity Officer, Associate Professor of History at Bethel University. Thank you for joining us, Professor.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You bet. Take care of yourself. Giving us plenty to unpack there. When we come back, we'll talk to a reporter, a legal analyst at CBS about today's Supreme Court ruling, what it means, some perspective next. Paul Douglas, thank you for tuning in. If you didn't hear, another fairly momentous Supreme Court decision, this one revolving around DACA, the Deferred Action on Childhood Arrivals Program, which was implemented by President Obama. Executive order back in 2012, and the Trump administration attempted to dismantle it. SCOTUS, the Supreme Court, said not so fast. You have to do it the right way if you want to do it. To provide some perspective, we reached out to CBS legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum, and so grateful, Thane, that you could join us today.
Of course, Paul, anytime.
What stood out to you as a legal analyst about this decision, and specifically what Chief Justice John Roberts, who last time I checked is still a conservative, any idea why he sided with the liberals in this case?
Yes, Paul. I mean, look, remember, after Justice Kennedy left the Supreme Court, everyone assumed that if anyone was going to become the stepped in the shoes of the swing voter to become in a 5-4 decision, siding with liberals, it would be Justice Roberts, which was so surprising earlier this week in that decision, because in that instance, both Gorsuch and Roberts sided with liberals. So, yes, you're right. That was a surprise and yet not a surprise, because we assume that if the liberals were going to win any of these cases, it would be because Roberts moved over to their side. Remember, this is a deferred action statute. That's what it's called. Mm-hmm. And Roberts is essentially saying, look, if you want to dismantle an executive action that was undertaken by your predecessor, you have the right to do it. It's the part of your constitutional authority, although President Trump was claiming that President Obama had exceeded his constitutional authority. But you can't do it in an arbitrary and capricious way. You have to give us a rational reason for doing so. You can't merely state that President Obama exceeded his constitutional authority. You have to show that you've taken into account the hardships that would cause all of the Dreamers, 600,000-700,000 of them, many of whom have relied on this decision since 2012. And so in a way, the Supreme Court is inviting the Trump administration to go back and start all over, but to give us a rational, justifiable reason for dismantling this executive order.
Thane, how quickly could that happen? I mean, some of the analysts were saying, well, SCOTUS just basically gave the president a roadmap for how to do it right. Is there any chance that he could do this between now and the election, or would it be contingent on the president winning re-election in November?
Good question. Well, look, they can restart, commence an entirely new case. But remember, it will start at a lower court. It doesn't start at the Supreme mm-hmm. Court. So the question is, what would happen in that lower court? It would be seeking injunctive relief, would be seeking emergency relief. But you can't just go right back to the Supreme Court. It's unlikely that this will get resolved in time for the election, even though the case itself might commence in the fall. So, yes, this is something that, if it takes place at all, wouldn't even show up on the Supreme Court's docket and wouldn't get decided until next summer. And by that point, President Trump will have all the incentive in the world to pursue this. And if it's Joe Biden, he will again say, look, this is not something my administration would pursue. I'm perfectly happy to keep the Dreamers Act in place. Because this was something that was initiated while I was vice president.
I know one of the concerns that Chief Justice Roberts has had is politicizing the Supreme Court. I mean, they are supposed to be totally independent, right? I mean, not playing favorites, even though they are appointed by presidents over the years. And I'm just curious, based on what you're seeing with this decision and the decision on Monday regarding employers not being able to fire people because they're gay or transgender, is the Supreme Court in some respects reflecting the mood of the nation and the direction that America may be going in terms of public opinion?
Well, and also on issues of social issues, because you
right.
can clearly say that the Title VII case from earlier this week on sort of workplace discrimination, protecting Title VII Civil Rights Act, protecting transgender as well as gays, gender identification, as well as so yes, that deals with more social issues. Look, this is what the Supreme Court does. In many ways, it breaks a tie. You have Congress, you have the president. Mm-hmm. The administration in the workplace discrimination case was on the side of workers who wanted to continue the right to fire people based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. And in this case, President Trump looked to dismantle the executive action undertaken by his predecessor. The Congress usually is responsible for immigration matters. Executive actions, Paul, are usually this very thing. It's an attempt by the president often to take a position to sidestep the legislative branch, to actually Remember, the President Trump tried to do that with the building of the wall, right? Mm-hmm. All of these cases of emergencies, right? It's all about taking on executive action and usurping the role of Congress. So look, you know, also Justice Roberts, the Chief Justice said, we call balls and strikes. He's put in this position. The Supreme Court is put in this position because it's the only place people could go in order to get relief. The only place that dreamers could have been saved is through the courts. Otherwise, the administration through the Department of Homeland Security simply was looking to dismantle it, and, you know, and none of those dreamers would have been protected had there not been a lawsuit filed on their behalf.
Well, I appreciate the perspective, and I'm hoping that our listeners do too. CBS legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum, thank you so much for weighing in. We appreciate you breaking this down for us, sir.
Thank you, Paul. Hope it was helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. We're just trying to keep up. Thank you, Thane. When we come back, how much ching do you have? Are you interested in a little bit of memorabilia from Prince that was used apparently in the movie Purple Rain? You only have a few hours left to bid on this. Details next. You know, when you think of Prince, you think complicated individual, genius when it comes to creativity. At least that's what I think. And no money issues. I mean, talk about making it big. Turns out there were some money issues, and I wasn't aware of this, but one of the synthesizers that Prince used to record his Purple Rain album back in 83, a Yamaha DX7 keyboard, is up for auction. Currently owned by a former Paisley Park Studios employee, Shane Keller, who worked with Prince between 91 and 96. He worked his way up to become Prince's personal recording engineer, and he purchased this DX7, this synth, in late 95. And get this, at the time, Keller says Prince needed to raise money to fund travel expenses for the gold tour in Japan. So his road crew had a fire sale of old equipment to help. Money was tight as Prince was in this battle with Warner Brothers. The synth expected to fetch upwards of $25,000. There are also a sampler and discs that may raise another $5,000. By the way, just Google the Marvels of Modern Music sale, which is going on today up until midnight if you have any hankering to bid on this. I just thought that was interesting that at one point they had a fire sale to raise money so that they could go on tour in Japan. Interesting. DJ, what you got? Anything interesting?
Well, Paul, yeah, I have one note I want to get to, and I want to ask your opinion about it. But, you know, clearly our country is going through these, you know, massive growing pains as it pertains to racial issues. And one of the things that we've heard about is yesterday we heard that Aunt Jemima will no longer exist and Uncle mm-hmm. Ben's Rice will remove the black gentleman from their label as well, it sounds. And then today we heard a more local story in Duluth where city leaders are making a push to remove the word chief from job titles, so it wouldn't be a police chief or fire chief or whoever else, because they are concerned about offending indigenous peoples that may have used that term. And look, I don't know if that is the right call or not. I suppose they'll have a community meeting, and I hope they figure it out. And if that's the right move, then I'm all for it. Let's remove chief. But what it made me think of this week is, you know, I wonder what ad agency or what business right now that maybe highlights people of color in their advertising is thinking, well, you know, last year we thought we were using this person in our ads or their image, and we thought it was a good way to promote, you know, racial issues. And now they're re-looking at all of those things and think, you know, is this appropriate? Is it not? Are we going to get, you know, in a Twitter battle because we used a black gentleman instead of a white gentleman, and maybe there is a racial undertone we didn't understand? And I just think there's a lot of those conversations happening, and I'm just not sure where that goes, but it puts people that are trying to discern these issues in a tough situation, because I don't know that there's a straight line you can draw. And I think as our country, again, goes through these growing pains, that's something we're going to have to grapple with.
I'd love to talk to some Native Americans and get them on the air and ask, is this a pejorative? Yeah. The word chief.
Yeah.
I mean, because I don't have the answer to that, but we want to be sensitive to everyone. But this is the first time that's even crossed my mind. I'm embarrassed to admit. Didn't even think, you know, brain didn't even go there.
And, you know, I had a caller call in the other day who was against all of these changes. And they said, well, there's, you know, the Quaker Oats guy. He's a white guy that's on the Quaker Oats packaging. Is that okay? And I said, you know, I don't know. But if there's some Quakers out there that are offended by that, sure, I guess we should change that too. I don't know the answer to that, but I think these are the conversations that we're going to start having in a new and fresh way.
And many of us will be afraid to ever open our mouths or post anything on social media. I mean, look, there's a lot of paranoia, much of it well-deserved, and a lot of soul-searching.
And we're going to have to learn how to forgive people that are truly meaning the best, but are in a, as Ruben Rivera told us an hour ago, in a society that is colored by this race issue and has been for centuries. How do we correct that and navigate it? And it's not going to be easy.
I thought the Me Too movement was a sonic boom, you know, a neutron bomb going off. And it was, and it is. And it forced a reckoning, an awakening. And this is Me Too times 100 or 1,000. If you didn't hear, big news from the Supreme Court, a big ruling today, and the airlines getting very serious about wearing masks. We'll have the latest on that next. Stick around.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.